open and informed discussion on the challenges schools, teachers, and students face during COVID-19. This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk on Devil Radio 92.7.
Welcome back, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Dr. Tim Slucker here. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, give him the night off. Thank you, last half hour, Teacher Joanna, the most incredible guest always to come in and help us fill what a spot sometimes when Johnny's not here. But we're back the second half hour, and in Wisconsin right now, we elect, which in some states would be the state secretary of education. Here in Wisconsin, it's the Department of Public Instruction, of which we have a state superintendent who is elected by the people. It's, quote, a nonpartisan election. And we have one of those candidates, Dr. Jill Underley, who's running for the position of state superintendent, on the line with us. Dr. Underley, welcome to Busted Pencils. How are you doing?
I'm doing so well. Thank you very much for having me here tonight.
Well, you know, we got to get this out. It's the only education talk show in Wisconsin, so it's like we need to get, you know, some people out there to hear about Dr. Jill Underley. And so from your webpage, which I would tell everybody to go to underley4wiswi.com, and you can see lifelong educator. Now, Dr. Jill Underley knew she wanted to be a teacher way back in 1986 when she was in third grade. She was inspired by the first teacher in space, Krista McAuliffe. And here you are now in 2021 wanting to lead the entire state public system of education. How did you get to this point?
Well, what was it that Krista McAuliffe said? What was her big quote? I touch the future because I teach. And that's honestly, you know, that was one of the inspirations I had, you know, throughout my middle school life. And then I had some excellent teachers in middle school and high school. I went to a very, very good public school. And I had teachers who tapped me on the shoulder and said, you know, you'd make a great teacher. And I didn't really think about it. I liked school. And I was good at school, but I guess the other piece of it is I love kids. And, it's just touching the future, you know, and inspiring others to, you know, be the best versions of themselves and find their passions and give back, too, is the other piece of it, too.
Well, I mean, you've had a long career in education, teacher all the way to superintendent and now going for state superintendent. I will point out that I didn't realize I was old, but when you were in third grade in 1986, I was in my sophomore year of college. I was like, wait a minute, that can't be true. But, it is there. But, you know, so credibility, and this is, you know, we talk about this. In other, you know, some states, depending on the governor, the Secretary of Education just comes in as part of that team. Where here in Wisconsin, we're lucky to have the fact that this is an elected position. Now it's, quote, nonpartisan. And so if I'm, you know, out there thinking, the election's coming up, state superintendent, why should I vote for Dr. Jill?
Well, I think at the end of the day, there's a few things that set me apart from my opponent. You know, the first is when you think about just the issues, it is about public funding, you know, keeping our public dollars in our public schools. You look at the number of referendums on the ballot, and you look at how our schools have been divested in public monies for the past 10 years in Wisconsin, $5 billion just in the past 12 years. I think that's what sets me apart from her first and foremost. I think the other piece of it, though, is just its integrity, its honesty. I'm the person that has, you know, walked the walk. I'm leading a school district right now during the pandemic. My school has been open. I'm supportive of teachers. I've always been supportive of teachers, whereas my opponent, you know, supported Act 10. Again, at the end of the day, you have to say who do you trust, you know. And I've been a great steward of our public funds. When I worked at the Department of Public Instruction, I managed huge Title I budgets. I've been a great steward of public funds here at Pecatonica. You know, we've passed two referendums just for the amount of money that we need. We haven't, overspent anything. There's no missing, $500 million from the budget. So I think at the end of the day, there's certainly things that do set us apart, but I have two kids in school right now. I think so I'm every parent as well as, every educator in the pandemic as well.
So, you talk about the pandemic, what a year. And from a teacher standpoint, as a superintendent, looking at this, are there lessons from the pandemic that if you are elected, that you think will inform some of the ideas and policies and positions you want to take that maybe weren't as clear as they are today, or you're rethinking? It's been a year, right? It's just, I was interviewing one teacher, and as one teacher kind of put it, as we're having these now what seem to be debates, but I think they're largely media generated about, quote, back to school versus not back to school. He had said, like, last March at this time I was a hero. Now this March I'm a zero because I still am. I'm kind of cautious about COVID. And so so post COVID, hopefully that's where we're going to be in the fall. Dr. Underley, where would DPI look to make any type of, wow, we didn't know that then, but boy, now we know it.
Yeah, I think, there's certainly a lot we know now that we didn't know then. And I'll just start kind of, when I look at internet and I look at access and affordability, there is so much progress that we need to make, for rural internet as well as urban internet and affordability. You may have access to internet, but it's unaffordable. And when you look at the long-term impacts for education, the whole point of us taking our kids and putting them in a public school building is so that they have an equalized opportunity. It doesn't matter, the price of your clothes, who your parents are, none of that when you're in a public school, because you have the same access to the great teachers, the equipment, the technology, the curriculum, right? That's what public schools do. But when the pandemic hit and we all had to scatter back into our homes, that's when things became unequal again. And the greatest equalizer was technology, except a lot of us didn't have access to it. And then it wasn't just the kids. It was the teachers, too.
Right.
And parents trying to work from home and pounding their head against the wall because they don't have enough bandwidth, and they're trying to do their jobs as well. And so we know that internet is an essential utility, just like running water and electricity. We have to have internet. So certainly working with the federal government to use some of the funding that they've been allocating because of COVID, it's a one-time shot of money. I say, hey, let's put it towards something that's going to last us a long time. Let's build the infrastructure for internet. The other thing that I think, that are related that we've learned is that we've known this for some time, but traditional face-to-face school isn't for every kid. We've been hearing from the parents who are, saying, well, my kid needs to be back face-to-face because they learn better face-to-face. But for us, for a proportion of, I'm going to say maybe 20% of kids, face-to-face school was awful for them, and Do you read Gloria Ladson Billings' blog, Black and Smart?
Yeah. Well, she's been on the show a couple times.
Yeah. So did you see her post where she talked about, this is probably like October or November, where she talked about how for Black and brown kids, learning from home has actually been a reprieve from all the microaggressions that they experience in a public school.
Right.
And I think about other kids, like kids on the autism spectrum, like my own son. He prefers learning from home. He can work at his own pace. He can walk around with his shoes off. He's got sensory issues. These things that, home is his sanctuary. And, being able to learn from home interact with his teachers and keep up on his assignments, and he actually is doing better.
Well, I add to this, I mean, we've had a couple of teachers on, you know, one from Boston, one from Seattle, that talked about the fact that just what you said, and we're saying, you know, quote, you wouldn't need, yes, there are certain special populations, but even these kids who are saying, I just, you know, I would have never spoken up, but now I feel comfortable speaking out because there's something about that format. And so there's an engagement issue that we're seeing. It's like, you know, and so, yeah, was face-to-face? Yes, we want it. But guess what? There were some kids and are some kids who are saying, you know what, I'm actually kind of thriving right now. And so how do we then, if the potential of being the lead face of public education in the state of Wisconsin, you know, how do you talk to people about the fact that, of course, I want face to face, but we learned something else during the pandemic?
Right. We have to. That's what I guess I say is because, you know, face to face works for most kids, but there's kids it doesn't work for, and they deserve access to public education that works for them too. I guess that's where we have to look at, it's 2021, and it's not 1921. We're still doing school the same way we did it 100 years ago. And I guess that's the other thing we've learned, is that school is changing. And, we keep adding and adding and adding, and there's not enough time, you know, to get through everything that we want to do, nor is there enough time for our teachers to plan or to confer or to discuss with other teachers about what's best for kids. They don't have time to look at, you know, formative data, for example, to see where a kid is struggling and then devise a plan. They don't have time to, especially, I'm going to talk quickly about rural schools. I mean, rural school teachers may have smaller class sizes, but let's say you're a high school science teacher in a rural school. You're not teaching chemistry all day. You're teaching chemistry, and you're teaching two sections of biology, and then you're teaching another section of physics. And that's a lot of work. I mean, you've got to think about the fact that they've got, you know, different content, but they also have different assessments. And then they've got to, you know, parents, you know, it's really a lot. And I think we put too much on our teachers.
Well, you know, in fact, we're coming up on a break. And that's where, as we come into the last segment, I really want to take this too, is just talking about teachers again, being the former dean of the School of Education at Edgewood and, you know, teacher education and licensing and all of those things. You have a lot to say about that. So I really want to talk about that and the fact that these people are working incredibly hard. How do we, and you've said this, how do we reprofessionalize? This is it. We are talking with Dr. Jill Underle. She is candidate for state superintendent in the state of Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. If you want to call us, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Back in a minute.